Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Wait, I'm missing an article here. I had it a minute ago. Hopefully it's here somewhere. Things are a little confused. A little confused this morning. Is it there? I hope it's this one. Let me just pull this one up here first. Nope, that's not it. I know it's here somewhere because, you know, if I have to do a search, I'll find it. It's not a big deal. Things are happening so fast here right now. There's kind of an explosion in my brain going on. And when Jean gets here, we'll talk about, you know, stuff she wants to talk about. But until then, let me kind of get you caught up in the last 24 hours of thinking. As you know, I like to stay ahead of everybody else in the news by at least, you know, 6 months to a year. And I'm not the only one. There's a few other folks who have done this. Bill Gertz, you know, when he reported on the Wuhan lab, you know, when we broke the story that chloroquine cures COVID and there is no pandemic, there is no need for a pandemic, it's all taken care of, you know, all this kind of stuff. And of course, everybody laughs at us and they say, ah, you're an idiot, you're a fool. And of course, they're ridiculing like crazy, right? So all this nonsense is going on. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, and I suddenly realized that as everybody seems to be turning on Dr. Fascist right now, something that we did, you know, over a year ago, once the rest of the dogs are feeding at the kill, then, you know, the rest, I don't have to do that anymore. It's already been done. Okay. So I need to get you ahead. So the title of today's show, Obama's Pandemic Playbook as Fauci's Instructions Under Trump. I think I just barely got that in under my character number restrictions. But here's what I'm thinking, all right? Something has come to my attention just in the last 24 hours that apparently Obama left a pandemic playbook for Trump, that they had a pandemic exercise that they did with the Trump transition team like a week before Trump got inaugurated. Now, I don't know about you, but it seems to me most presidents a week before the inauguration are not thinking, hey, let's do a major exercise together. They're thinking, I'm out of here. I'm going golfing. I'm going to Martha's Vineyard. I'm going to not see the oceans rise because there is no global warming. I'm going to sit on my butt. I mean, this is what I'm thinking Obama's doing, right? Okay. But he doesn't do that. All right. So you know me, I'm always looking for the motivations. All right. He doesn't do that. He holds this big pandemic exercise. So let me get my timeline here and I'll get to, I'll explain it later. Basically, Dr. Fascist explains that Trump's going to have a pandemic in his administration, most likely. He always says, you know, one of the qualifiers, right? This is January 11th of 2017. January 13th of 2017, this big, you know, Obama transition team, Trump transition team, exercise takes place, all right? And then they have this pandemic playbook, which are instructions of what the government should do in case of a pandemic. All right. So I won't tell you exactly how this all connects, y'all, because I want you in the second hour. But they're connected. And they're connected, I think, in very fascinating ways. And on that note, now that I've totally confused Jean, she's like, Greg, what the hell are you doing? You know, let's play her theme for one of the last few times. I've actually been kind of busy at the production board coming up with new things for you. But let's get Jean on, and then she'll Jean, I'll explain it all to you. In these times of trial and tribulation, of epidemic and or economic crisis, of personal challenge and societal collapse, there is one place you can retreat, recharge, and re-energize to take on the world. That place is the Life Coach Report with Jean Vernick here on Action Radio. What better way to start your day? Okay, Jean, do you want me to spill the beans now? Because you'll have to go to work before I get to the second hour, or do you want to be in suspense and just wait until then? What's your choice?
Good morning. No, I want you to spill the beans now.
Okay, that's fine. I think that's good. All right, so here's what's going on. So I want to share this with everybody, too. So as I was just saying, A couple things came to mind. One, I found this very ultra-liberal timeline for coronavirus. It's almost like an alternative timeline. It's like an alternative reality. It's called Just Security, and it's put up by New York University Law School. I mean, it doesn't get more liberal than that. I mean, a bunch of communists running around, right? And so in it, they talk about this pandemic exercise. I thought, well, that's curious. You know, and then I found another source that's talking about this pandemic playbook. And I'm thinking to myself, why would the Obama administration in the waning days, the election's over. I mean, they're at the end of the transition. This is not a time when a previous administration does a lot of major initiatives, knowing damn well that a week later it's all going to get canceled anyway, right? So why would they do this? You know, because Obama's not stupid, you know, dangerous, you know, communist, you know, Muslim, sure, but stupid? No, he's definitely not that. So the only thing I could think of, and we're going to pursue this further as we all hopefully will delve into this, is that he left a playbook behind. And the reason he left it behind was not for Trump, because he knew Trump was never going to go along with it. In fact, they didn't. He left it behind for Dr. Anthony Fauci as a guideline for what Obama wanted during the pandemic that they knew was coming. Okay, so follow the timeline. I'm going to move my little studio screen over here. And I've been building this time for months now, and I just keep filling in the gaps and learning things. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Where'd that come from? All right. So let's take a look at the transition here. Transition is, so the first case of COVID-19, and this is reported by Dr. David Martin, January 2020. I got the exact dates here in a little bit. January 11th, 2020. That's when allegedly China released their gene sequence for COVID. I don't know if that's true or not. Claire says it's not. Claire Lopez, who reports on Thursday, I've heard many sources say it is. I don't know why China would release the gene sequence, because that would prove that they created the virus. All right. So that to me would be stupid. So that's why I'm not sure if that's necessarily true or not. So January 29th, so the White House Coronavirus Task Force established January 29th. Let's get into, wait a minute, where is my time on? That's 2020. Okay, I got to go back a little bit. I got to go back to 17. I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong place. Okay, January 11th, 2017, 9 days before. Okay, go ahead. Question?
I was going to say, do you know when the first time was that Fauci started talking about there being a virus during the Trump administration? Or
that's a good question.
Did he even talk about that way before that?
No,
he talked about it before Trump took office.
That's another one of my personal beliefs, is the coronavirus task force, the specific purpose was to head off cures like hydroxychloroquine and direct people towards vaccines. That task force was to put Trump aside, to make him look like an idiot, for Fauci to take over and run the government and run the lockdowns behind the scenes, run the mask mandates, and we're going to look for those connections too. I believe that task force was not Trump's idea. I believe it came to him from his series of lying advisors. And I want to find out who those advisors are. That's another part of the puzzle, okay? So we know he was lied to. We know he was lied to badly. We know that he believes that he saved 2.2 million people, which is a total lie, because that many people were never going to die. Those numbers were picked to coincide with the pandemic severity index of the 2007 guidelines. We know that. I know that. Okay. So let me so when Dr. Fauci first spoke, that's a good question. I don't know. We're going to look into that. But anyway, let me just do this quick timeline here. January 11, 2017. Okay, 9 days before Trump is inaugurated, Dr. Fauci, still calling him Fauci then, announced Trump would have a major pandemic during his administration. And I believe that was Colorado University. I'm going to get more details on that.
Okay.
January 13th, 2 days later. Okay. Do you know about that?
No, there was something. Yeah, I heard there was something that he was going to have a pandemic during his time in office,
right?
But I couldn't remember when he first started talking about that.
No, I'm starting to source all these things. Before, I was just writing down events in the timeline. Now I'm going to source them all, because it's getting more critical to know where this information came from. Now, January 13th, this is only 2 days later, the joint Obama-Trump transition team runs an exercise for pandemic preparedness. And this comes from this article, Just Security, which is a magazine in the New York University Law School. Okay, do you know who supports the New York University Law School? Are you ready? Open Society. Open Society. And what is Open Society? Who funds Open Society?
Soros.
You know? George Soros, exactly.
Yeah.
So here you've got a timeline, you've got a leftist timeline for the pandemic run through a leftist university law school supported by a leftist organization, Open Society. Gee, what could go wrong? Okay, it gets better. 3 months after this, April 21st, 2017. This is all the beginning of the Trump administration. The CDC changes the pandemic guidelines so they could go to full lockdown immediately in the next pandemic and not have any index to follow. My conclusion, this is the pandemic severity index. That's the one that ratcheted up the lockdowns depending on how many people actually died. Okay, not what they did, which they went for full lockdown immediately because based on a faulty model. Okay, so now that I think about it, the plot gets even thicker. I think the change in the CDC guidelines may be able to be traced back to this pandemic playbook of the Obama administration. My guess is that Obama was running Dr. Fauci behind the scenes to make sure the pandemic happened as a way to get back at Trump. And so that Fauci could be the prostitute of big pharma and force vaccines on the rest of us. That's what I think is going on. What do you think?
That all makes sense because then it fits in, gets them back to their narrative of, you know, population, I don't want to say control, but get rid of part of the population, which Bill Gates has wanted for years. But yeah, that would be very interesting to see because how ironic that they changed the pandemic regulations, especially when Fauci knew or not knew, but he said, warned there was going to be a pandemic sometime during Trump's presidency. Yeah,
this
so
is weird. This is called the
put everything in place ahead of time. So yeah, wow. Wow. Well, it'll be interesting to learn more about it, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, we're breaking the news now. I mean, nobody else is talking about this. I mean, they've talked about the playbook, and they've talked about different things. See, what we do that I think is so special is that we connect dots. I mean, the dots are out there. It's amazing how much information is out there. And I've learned to put this information on my hard drive, on the computer, because they change things. You know, things disappear. Reports that come to light, you know, someone says, oh, wait a minute, we can't have that out there. China is famous for changing all information. So, in fact, the original 2017, the new pandemic guidelines have totally changed format. They've been gone over. So they're not the same as they were when they were issued in 2017. They've been revised, but there's no revision date on it. This is where it gets more interesting. I've got both.
Who revised
Oops.
Them?
I don't know.
Yeah,
the text looks pretty much the same, but I don't know what they've done to it. This is why I got the original version on my hard drive, okay, and I've got
Very, compare the two.
Well, it's on my list.
Wow.
So we know that Fauci and Facebook are connected. All right, they're having an incestuous relationship. We know that Fauci is basically Dr. Mengele in this situation, and Zuckerberg is Joseph Goebbels. You know, Minister of Propaganda. So you've got your Minister of Propaganda running Facebook and social media, controlling what people think. You've got Dr. Mengele, you know, the evil doctor who's basically, you know, killing people by withholding life-saving information to the tune of several hundred thousand. He's probably killed far more people than Mengele did. Mengele did horrible, disgusting experiments on people. Well, he probably resulted in hundreds of thousands or even millions of people dying too. Anyway, I kind of compare, it's not the amount of people that die, it's the attitude. It's the total disregard for human life. It's the lack of any conscience or humanity. That's why I equate those two. All right. And so now we got Obama. Okay. Now what's his role in this? I don't know. And then we still don't know what Hillary's role is yet. I haven't even explored that one. But we know that Fauci is a big Hillary supporter. Okay. We got the love note. Oh, I love you, Hillary. You're wonderful. You know, can't wait for you to be president. All this kind of stuff from Fauci. Those are out there in the public domain. Okay, so this is it's getting a whole lot more interesting. A whole lot was done between the November election in 2016 and when Trump took office in 2017 and the months immediately following. I don't think the Obamas ever, you know, left, they left the White House, but I don't think they ever left believing that they should be in charge of everything. And so
he's now taken off where he left off when he was president, more so because, I mean, yeah, he did have a say when Trump was in charge, definitely, behind the scenes, which, you know, but now he's in full throttle force ahead, control of what's going on, definitely.
Yeah, well, he's using his favorite idiot, Joe Biden. He's got his favorite, you know, spokes babe, you know, Kamala Harris, the party girl. You know, who's only competent to be a hostess in a restaurant. Nothing wrong with hostesses in restaurants, by the way. I'm not disparaging them. I'm disparaging Kamala Harris. Yeah, so Obama's fingerprints are all over this. I know Josie's going to comment on this when she gets on because she loves this stuff. It's going to be fun all over to her. I've corrected her report, too, so I actually pronounce her name properly. And everybody's last name's around here, so I forget. Anyway, so
right.
Your turn. What would you like to bring to our morning coffee and discussion? What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind? It's kind of something that we talked about during the weekend when I talked to you. And mm-hmm. You'll know what I'm talking about when I start, but I want to ask people, whose life are they living? Whose life are you living? Are you living the life you want to live? Meaning, are you making the decisions that make you feel good, that gets you in the direction of where you want to go? Or are you living someone else's life? And then on the other side of the coin, look at your spouse or your significant other or your children. Are they living the life they want to live? Or are you living your life through them?
I'm just going to let you go because you've got more than enough there for the rest of the show. So just go for it. This is fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying that is because if you're not living the life you want to live, and you're following someone else's mandate or dictate or what they say is better for you, or if you're trying to tell someone else how they should live, you need to stop, and take a step back. Because bottom line is this, it's so easy to look at someone and say, oh, they're making a mistake. No, you got to do it like this. But you know what? There's learning in that. And it's not a mistake if you take something out of it. And so let people live their lives on their own terms as long as it's legal. And then I would say the same for you. Live your life on your own terms. It's like years ago, I love this. This is a stupid, simple analogy, but we went to a restaurant and one of the people I was with, she had her dessert first and we were like, wow, we've never seen that. And she goes, well, you know, I can take my food home and warm it up. But I can't take this home and warm it up because the ice cream would melt. And so I was like, man, I love that. You know what? It don't matter that she ate her dessert first. You can do whatever you want. It's like just because society or your whoever says, no, you have to do this or that, it's like crap. No, do what you want to do because, one, it makes you feel good. And what I mean by that is you don't want to, as I said, don't do anything illegal. But if you're going to do something and right away you feel like you're being suffocated, sucker punched, whatever, don't do it because it's not the right decision for you. But if it makes you feel expansive, it makes you come alive, it just makes you excited, you know you're on the right track. And you may ask why I'm saying this, especially Greg on your show, what does this have to do with anything we talk about? Well, the reason I'm saying it is look at Biden. You know, years ago, I think, yes, he wanted to be president. Now, what this last election, did he really want to be president or did Jill want him to become president? And then you have to ask, did Jill want him to become president years ago? And the reason I say this, and I know politics, and okay, I'm judging, but a lot of politicians, I think, are crooked. There are some that are not, but I think people may go into politics and they may be on the up and up, but they get there and it don't take long and they are crooked. And bottom line is this, you look at Biden's past and what he said, what he did. I mean, all the females, all the little girls, he touches their hair, he sniffs their hair, and all, you know, Tara Reid, how sad is it that no one believed her, but yet they believe all these people that came out for and accused Trump of things, and then we find out that wasn't even true. And really, personally, and then you look at Kamala Harris and what she did to get to where she's at, it's like personal life. You know, if you're two consenting adults, you can do whatever. I don't care. But the bottom line is this. When someone wants to become president, all the skeletons are usually found in the closet, all right? In Biden's case, a lot of them have been hidden. But you talk about the video clips of what he did to Clarence Thomas years ago in the confirmation of the Supreme Court justices. Biden was nasty. You look at segregation and the stuff he did. He didn't want his kids to go to certain schools. It's like, really? But now you get all these people that would vote for you because why? They hate Trump? But the reason I'm saying all this is his closet has a lot of crap in it. And if people would have really looked at it, there's no way he would have been president. So I got to wonder, if even years ago, did he really run because he wanted to, or did he run because Jill wanted him to? And if you look at things, I just, it's ironic I'm on your show because I'm not even following politics as much as I used to. But the little bits I heard from his overseas trip this past weekend, and he couldn't even answer questions. He couldn't even read correctly. I mean, and I shouldn't talk because I know, you know, he was reading. I'm supposed to ask this person a question. You know, Greg, I mean, as I said, I probably shouldn't talk because when I post some of your things you send me, as you know, sometimes I put on the post even what you say I should post. So, I mean, that's like the pot calling the kettle black. But person, he is the president of the United States. He should be able to have a coherent thought. He should be able to know where he's going. He should be able to know who he's with. I mean, Jill has to guide him around. Isn't that sad? It's like, so yeah. Is he really living the life he wants to live, or he's being president, or he was pushed to be president? Well, also for all the agendas, too. But it is, did he even start that years ago? Because Jill had the ego and the whatever drive, because she wanted him to be there because of everything that goes along with it. I don't know. I can't say. But just look at your own life, and how are you living your life? Is it to your best interest? Is it to your highest good? Because we all were given gifts and talents. We are always all given certain desires. And by using our gifts and talents and just being the best we can be, we are actually honoring God or the universe or whatever you want to call it, because we are using those gifts, because nobody has the same gifts and talents as we have. And yes, we are going to screw up. And I've been, I really found that out this weekend. I screw up a lot. And the thing is, we have to be forgiving. If God can forgive, then why can't other human people, beings, forgive other people and say, wow, I was wrong. Or, you know, I could have handled that a little bit differently. But, you know, the moment we do things the way we do them, and we can learn and we can grow. And sometimes it may take one time to learn it. It may take a million times to learn something. Doesn't matter. Keep on trying. But the big thing is, don't push someone else just as well as don't allow someone else to push their life on you, because they may know you better than you do, or so they say, or they may be disappointed or sad in their own life because maybe they wanted to be a doctor, or they wanted to be a pharmacist, or they wanted to be own a business, and they didn't do it. They maybe got married early, and they were whatever, ended up being whatever, and that's just how it went. So now they want you to be that person. It's like, no, 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 no. Fight for who you are and the magnificent you inside of you.
You got
to take a breath.
No, this is brilliant. A couple of really, really important things there. I think this is what causes people huge stress in their life, is that they're always trying to live to other people's expectations for themselves. Whereas they don't know those other people's expectations. In fact, other people are so concerned with how other people view them, they don't really have expectations for you. So stop worrying about it. They're too busy worrying about themselves. Everybody really is worrying about themselves. So if you live your life based on what you think you should do for other people's expectations, you're going to waste a lot of time. Okay. You're also going to have a lot of heartache. You're going to find that you can't resolve the situation because you're never going to know those other people's expectations, because chances are you're not going to ask what they are. And even if you do, you're not going to get the right answer. Yeah. You're miserable. So that's not going to work. Secondly, as far as Jill Biden goes, Jill Biden is someone that we need to investigate as one of the most corrupt, manipulative people on the planet. I think that she is absolutely power hungry. I think she's obsessed with being in the White House. I think that she hitched her star to Joe, married him for the purpose of gaining power. As some folks do, you know, if you can't make it yourself, you know, you marry it, you know, and that goes for men and women. You look at her, and basically it's, for as far as I'm concerned, it's elder abuse for her to push Biden out onto all those stages and onto all these forums and all these things just so that she can be in the White House. That is the most greedy, selfish, disgusting person I think I've ever met. Well, not met, but at least heard of. And she deserves some investigation. You know, I really believe what she has done to Joe Biden is elder abuse. I think what Joe Biden has done to us is treason, but that's another story. But let's talk about Jill for a second. You know, how, from a life coach perspective, what is it about somebody that is so obsessed with the limelight and the glitz and the power that they're willing to abuse somebody else, even marry them, to get that kind of power and recognition? I mean, nobody would have heard of her otherwise. And she'd just be some professor somewhere writing, you know, peer-reviewed papers, which is good enough for most people that are professors. They're really happy with that because they know they're contributing. But it wasn't enough for Jill. Dr. Biden, as she says, with her education degree or whatever. So what do you think of her? I mean, don't pull any punches. What do you really think of her?
Next week, hopefully next Tuesday, I will report on lots more about her. My thinking is, though, with her, it's like she's not coming from a good heart. So basically, and the reason I say that, I can't say nobody comes from a good heart 100% of the time. But when you let ego take control, when you let fame, fortune take control, you haven't done your personal work. You haven't. And so she may come across as this whatever thing that they think she is, because even over the weekend or whenever she wore the jacket that said love on it compared to the jacket that Melania wore, I'm like, you know what? She loves nothing but power, money, image. And the thing is, as a life coach, what I would say, not that I'm looking at her life and judging, but it kind of, because you asked the question, basically what first comes to mind as she's not driven, or actually it could be like a wounded inner child, that she's not paying attention to her inner child, and she's letting fear and subconscious rule her life. And you can say, fear? Well, what does fear have to do with it? You know, when you want power, and not that, everybody has goals and aspirations. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine last night about this, and she said, you know, but some people, they just pretty much want to have a house, organized house, whereas other people want $1 million. Other people may want to be a doctor, whatever. But we each have our own goals, inspirations, whatever. And that is good. That's perfect. That's what I was talking about, because we should not put our opinions onto someone else. Let them have the goals they want. And they say, well, that's a small goal. To them, it could be a huge goal, but it could be a stepping stone. But who are we to judge which goal is too small or too big? But in her case, I think everything she went for, or everything they did, she did, was to get to this end result. And that's why I say, I don't believe, and I could be wrong, but I do not believe what she does comes from a good heart. I mean, even with what she said about Kamala, after Kamala said something about, you know, in the, was it the primaries, about, you know, she could have been one of those kids that Biden, and that's just a bunch of crap, because Kamala came from money, but she made it sound like she was like, you know,
a poor black child
who
went to Canadian private school.
Which is so not true. Exactly.
Right.
But, you know, supposedly Jill went off on her, and she didn't use very good language. And, you know, that could be, I don't want to say mama bear, but it could be mama bear. You know, she's protecting her own. And basically, I could say that while Biden can protect himself, in some ways I'd say yes. Now, no, I really believe he can't. But anyway, that said, I think she's got a lot of things she hasn't worked on. And so she's not coming from a good heart, from based on what I see. I could be totally wrong, but that's just based on what I see. And when you leave ego take control of your life, that's when you get, you know, a lot of the stuff you see about her. And the sad thing is, it's who's being hurt. I mean, even when you look at their family, it's like, I mean, Hunter's a mess. I mean, he's just, and it's just so interesting that why don't they want to know the facts? But who's covering up the facts? But there's so many people.
Why don't they ever appear together as a family? How come you never see them together as a family? You know, I mean, you get Jill.
And the one daughter supposedly a social worker, and she's hardly ever with the family. Yeah.
What a surprise.
So there's so much stuff. And even with her, that she supposedly had an affair with Joe before they were married. I mean, maybe her ex-husband lied about that. But what does he have to do to lie about that? You know, he has nothing to do. I mean, what's he going to gain by lying? Nothing.
Yeah.
But did you notice when that came out, nobody denied it. And
see, I don't know that as well.
I know people have affairs, and that's their business. But don't come across as this higher than mighty, you know, person. And then look in your own bedroom, look in your own closet, look in your own inner being first before you start condemning other people. And nobody is perfect, no. But yeah, I think her whole. Her whole persona, and I've not been up close with her, meaning I've not been up close with Melania either. But when I look at her, and even what she wears, it's like, did you really think those clothes make you look professional, build you up, or are you trying to look like someone you're not, meaning someone way younger than who you are? I mean, right now, she can be given almost any type of clothing she wants. She should be able to be, like, look immaculate. And you don't have to spend a whole lot of money to do that. So if she wants to look, even like Michelle Obama, I went and bought this at the Gap or wherever she bought her stuff from, I don't know. But it's like, not that you have to spend a lot of money, but you are in a classy position. It's like, dress the part.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking of a real guy question.
She's not living her life either. I think she's projecting her life onto others, like, you know, Joe, because she couldn't be president. She couldn't get the power job. So I'm going to live through power through him. That's my belief.
Okay, this is great, but here's a real guy question. I can't help, you know, doing this, reverting to my fraternity mode every once in a while. So I was just thinking, you know, when Biden and Jill are having sex, or at least trying to, you know, does he know who he's with? Does he call out her name? If he calls out another name, does she get offended because she's really happy to be in the White House and she's willing to do anything, including hearing somebody else's name, you know, to keep the power in the White House? How's that for a question? It's not a serious question.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's possible. What if he calls out his former wife's name because that's where he thinks he is, so to speak? Let's phrase it that way. But you know what I mean.
But the thing is, you know, the ironic thing is I work with a lot of, all dementia patients right now. That's my job. And so I see how they act. And so when I see Biden, he's got a lot of similar characteristics as some, put it that way. But even if he would say his first wife's name, I think Jill knows where he's at cognitively, definitely. I mean, if she doesn't, even with her degree, her doctorate degree in education, she should still be able to see that.
But the question is, we know she sees it. I mean, I'm convinced she sees it. My question is, does she care? Or is the power more important than the abuse she's putting on Joe Biden, throwing him out there all the time?
You don't even – me personally, it's a no-brainer question, because if she really cared about him and what he's going through, she would have never put him through this. She would have let him enjoy his last coherent memories with the family. And, you know, the thing is, It's nothing that breaks my heart more when you talk to people and they know they're not like they used to be, meaning their mind is going and they're not able to always explain it, but they just know things aren't quite right. But then you see them out, not even out, but with, you know, other people, family, whatever, and they act differently. Why would you want to put that all on show? I mean, for the whole world to see. I mean, people together, wherever he was over the weekend, they were laughing at him. Not about what he said. They were laughing about how he was acting and just answering a question. He couldn't even answer one of the questions. I'm like, wow, or couldn't or wouldn't, but I think it's all the same. I really don't think he can answer a question unless it's marked down on the piece of paper. I mean, when she had
it's worse than that.
Oh,
It's worse than that. I was watching the press conference this weekend. No, the press conference this weekend, and it looked like he had a prearranged list of people to call in a prescribed order, and he had answers to the questions that that the reporters were supposed to ask. Now, if any one of those reporters had asked a different question, he would have given an answer to what he thought what he was supposed to say, you know, based on the card in front of him. So this is where it could have been very interesting. A real reporter would have asked a different question. Of course, they would have been fired by their liberal organization, but that's not the point.
Oh, they could
go on to get a Pulitzer. But yeah, just if one reporter had the gumption to ask a totally different question than the one they agreed to with the handlers, and Joe Biden read the answer to the question that he thought he was being asked or was supposed to be asked, then that would have blown this open wider. But they didn't do that. They had a prescribed list. You look at him. He looks at one list on his right. He calls a reporter. Then he looks at another, you know, series of notes on his left, and he reads the answer. So he knew, or he didn't know, but the handlers had arranged the order of the reporters and the questions they were to ask, and he already had the answers ahead of time. There's no way he could have thought that stuff up. Nobody could. I mean, those answers were too perfect. Nobody's that good.
Right. Well,
you know, spontaneously.
Right, but the thing is, though, too, with that, why would they want to deviate from it? Because they're all in with him. They don't, one, they don't like, they hate Trump, which is so ironic.
Well,
yeah. And it's like, I think in order to, how would you say, in order for them to keep their job, they have to, you talk about, are they living the life that they want to live, or are they living the life of someone else? And it's obviously they are living the life of someone else. And the reason I say that, if someone tells you, okay, you got to do this, and you do it, you don't even ask a question why. You don't say, oh, that doesn't sound right. You just do it. Why are you doing it? I mean, a lot of times it's like, are you doing it because what? You need a job? But if you need a job, like let's say you stay there because if you're doing something you should not be doing, and you stay there because you need the job. What's going to happen? That money, things are going to happen. So you lose the money you make, or you don't get ahead, or you may get sick, or there's other things. The universe makes things happen when you're not being true to yourself. And also, I believe in karma. I really do. And what goes around comes around. And if they're doing something for that, you're just staying for the money. And, you know, I've taken jobs and it's for the money, but it's like, I still would not do anything illegal. And on that they call, I mean, in the healthcare, sometimes they want you to say, oh, you can't, don't pick this person up because insurance won't pay. Don't da-da-da-da. And that is not ethical, even though they say, oh, you can't do that. You know, that's what we're told. But then you get to a facility and it's like, hello, let's see reality. Sometimes you are made to really question yourself, but always ask, you know, are you doing it because you want to do it? Others want you to do it? And the thing is, you may say, oh, yeah, I want to do it. Oh, because what, you want to rob a bank because you want millions of dollars or whatever? That's not a way to get it. You know what I mean? And so,
well, that's the basis of illegal aliens. They come here because they want stuff, and they want our stuff, and they want us to earn stuff for them. It's morally depraved. But I'm going to give you a health question. All right. So say, you know, what do you think of the moral aspects of a health professional who's giving people vaccines knowing that they would never take it themselves because they don't trust it? How's that for morals or, you know, depravity?
You know, at the end of the day, they all have to go and live with themselves. And you have to look at it two different ways. You know, everybody makes their own decision whether or not they get the vaccine. If that person, how would you say, if that person tells other people about, like, okay, you need to make the decision yourself, or are they pushing the person to get the vaccine? If they're pushing that person to get the vaccine, yet they aren't getting it, then that's a whole different issue. I mean, you, as a healthcare professional, really, you should be objective. You shouldn't say yes or, you know, you can't tell someone. I mean, I know doctors that have told people, yes, absolutely get it. And then I know others that say, absolutely don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But
those that say,
there's,
you know, those that say don't get it, are they giving it? That's a question. In other words, are people giving a vaccine just to keep their job when secretly they, or even openly, they don't agree with it at all? That to me is being disingenuous.
Right, but the thing is, as I said, if they tell people, if I'd be a nurse and my job, part of my job would be to give the vaccine, you know, I'm not pushing it on to others. I may be saying, okay, this is what you want to do. If they say yes, that's their choice. That's their choice. Now, I mean, would I put myself in that position to even give someone if I'd be a nurse a vaccination? I mean, if I work in public health, I mean, well, if I worked in public health, that would be a really tough thing because, but, everything, you really have to look at things. But as I said, if you're not pushing forth your agenda, then I think it would be okay because you have your own beliefs. It's just like I have my own beliefs. It's like, do I like White Sox or Black Sox better? Who cares? But it's like, whatever. We all have our own beliefs one way or the other for a lot of different things. I think when you're talking about like the coronavirus or other mm-hmm. things that are so monumental, that has a little bit different bearing than white or Black Sox in the choice. But the thing is, and I know people even online, some doctors that are getting on there and saying, you know, they're anti-vaccine and they won't give it. And they, you know, the thing is, if I want a vaccine, then I know I need to go someplace that will give it. So, I mean, just, it's,
I think it's a lot more places that will than won't. Yeah. Yeah. My concern is, of course, people are, but people are being pressured into it. They're being mandated on their job. There's a Methodist hospital in Texas that's being sued, and the judge threw out the lawsuit, you know, because people didn't want to get the vaccination, and because it isn't a vaccine. Well, we've been through the whole story on that. But the question is, is it your body? Do you have choice over it?
Yeah.
Can you determine your own health care? And the thing is, if somebody has, you know, COVID, first of all, A, it's not the end of the world. B, stay home for a week. You know, do what we used to
right,
do.
Well,
the real use of quarantine. Instead, they've been quarantining the healthy people and telling anybody else to run around with a mask on. I mean, it's insane. Anyways, we don't want to get to her in a minute. Yeah.
People
okay.
out there, though, that can't take the vaccine because of health reasons. And so mm-hmm. if they work in the hospital, are they
well, that would be everybody.
Because they can't take the vaccine because of health reasons? And also, number two, with this vaccine, since they have no long-term human studies, I don't see how anybody could mandate it for the fact that, one, they don't know if it really works or not. You know, and
well, that's
two,
not the point, though.
They don't know what the side effects are. So it's
Gene, stick with the program. They don't care if it works or not.
No.
That's not the point.
No.
This is about selling vaccines. It's not about health. Okay.
I get that, but I'm talking about if they mandate it in the hospitals that employees need it.
Right.
That's why that lawsuit should have not been thrown out. It mm-hmm. should not have been thrown out.
Right. Well, the judge is wrong. The judge is a big corporate government judge. Yeah.
Right. But then you have to look at it now. How many people in this country have been vaccinated? I mean, is it 10%, 40%?
I don't know
the percentage. Possibly. I know they said New Hampshire, something, they had 80% of their adults vaccinated, or someplace I thought I read, they had the highest in the country. But what I'm getting at is...
That's sad.
Now you hear the rate of COVID decrease,
mm-hmm.
all along, and they were still having people taking the test, and look, how were the parameters in the test? Were they set too high so it looked like more people got it or had it? And
of
they
course.
Really did it, and that's why some people had less symptoms. I don't know. I don't know the whole thing, but I do know.
We do.
That
let me jump in here for a second, because we've documented this. We went over this very carefully. I had a number cruncher working with me, and the trend is very simple. The disease started in January of 2020. It peaked April 15th, tax day. It was pretty much gone by July 4th. Okay. And then came the bogus numbers when they brought it back, and they had to bring it back because at that point, the pandemic became a marketing tool. It was a real virus and people were really dying, and they're really dying because life-saving treatments were being withheld. But if you look at the numbers at the time, okay, the trend, it was like a 45 degree point up to about April 15th and about a 45 degree angle down. And when we started reporting on this, the trend, you know, the week before July 4th, it was, I think 300 people died. In the country, all right, 300, all right, and then after that, it was heading for zero. All right, that's where the trend was going. I don't think it would ever reach zero. I'm sure there'd always be some people, but the fact is, the curve reversed and skyrocketed up because they went from deaths to cases. They did a bunch of other things. I'm not going to rehash that now because we don't have time. But the point is that you know, once the pandemic ended, the propaganda pandemic took over. And that happened about July. So the fact is people are being vaccinated for a virus that ended, you know, almost a year ago. They're being vaccinated for a strain that doesn't exist anymore because the vaccines were created for the original Wuhan strain. Okay, that original Wuhan strain is gone. There's like 14 different ones now. So you're being vaccinated, you know, for a strain that doesn't exist, and you don't need it anyway because you got immunity for most of the people in this country. You know, it's a marketing device. It's about selling this thing. It's got nothing to do with health. Let me sort of conclude here. I'm going to get to Josie and Pianki's on the line too. It's going to be a busy day. Let me play our PSA for COVID. This seems the appropriate time, and I'll be right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
All right, let's bring on Josie with her theme. I'll be right back with her.
She was born in communist Nicaragua. She grew up without shoes or even a toothbrush. She came to the United States by an act of God and incredibly good fortune. She has seen the best of freedom, the worst of tyranny, and suffered the tests of personal tragedy and crisis. She has seen and survived evil waged upon her. Now she runs a successful business. She loves the USA. She is always helping someone, including me. She speaks Spanish as her first language. She goes on missions to Cuba. She is Josie Coffey, and this is the South of the Border Report. Josie has the knowledge, contacts in several countries, and a passion for freedom. She's on a mission to report what's going on, the truth, in all its horror. You may not like what's going on, but you have to learn what's going on because the future of our nation depends on you doing something about it. And now, Josie Coffey and the South of the Border Report.
Ooh, looks like I might have to fix that up a little bit. We almost got it done properly.
Good morning.
I was working last. Yeah,
It's better. It's getting better.
Yeah, I just got that little. I think it got clipped a little bit at the end there, so I might have to just do that last
That's
little thing.
Fine.
Yeah, I've inserted and played with, and you just like to replace one word on an audio, you know, recording. It's kind of fun. A cut and paste, and away you go. So I got Pianki on the line. I'll get to him in just a little bit, but I want to let you get started here, just in case you have to leave at 8 or anything else.
I was laughing.
Oh, good.
I was laughing listening to you when you said, what about Biden? Does he know who's in bed with?
Well, I mean, that's a guy question. You know, let me know Pianki's line of life.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought about it. I mean, Jean's talking away. She's doing a very authoritative chat. I'm thinking, wait a minute, this guy doesn't know where he is. Do you know who he's with? And if he calls out the wrong name, you know, in bed with Jill, does she get bothered by that? Or does she say, hey, I'm in the White House. It's okay. I mean, I don't know.
Pianki, what
do you think? Okay, good, Josie. Yeah.
Jesse. What I really think is, I don't think he sleeps with his wife. I think he sleeps in a bedroom by himself, since he's not well in the head.
Oh,
yeah.
So who's Jill with?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
By herself.
A lot of White House staff.
Oh, the dog.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Inquiring minds. What's that?
By herself, probably by herself.
Interesting. Well, she's in the White House, so what does she care? Pianki, what do you think of this horrible gossip we're engaging in this morning?
Well, good morning, Josie. The
good
thing
morning.
Is that the evidence on this pandemic, which has bamboozled Americans, is going to be there on the screen pretty soon. Doing the things that you're doing, pointing out events, pointing out what was said, and pointing out reactions, Americans should be faced with the truth. Now, how they go about digesting that truth, well, we don't know. We just got to continue going on because the attacks on the fabric of this country is continuing in more ways than just the pandemic.
You're right.
Interesting. Okay. Jesse?
Yeah. I wanted to say the people in Mexico are upset because Biden continues saying that the border is closed, but it's not closed. They're lying about the border being closed. And I was just thinking, many people from the left continue accusing Trump about the border, about putting the kids in the cage and separating families and all that. You know, they don't stop. But the fact is that Obama and Joe Biden has deported more families than any other president ever. And, you know, in the newspaper in Mexico on June the 14th, the newspaper called Hornanda, it's a newspaper there, they're saying that Joe Biden has deported more Mexicans. And I'm not talking about other illegal, more Mexicans than any other president ever. And
is that because more Mexicans came in illegally, or is it because, or what is it because of? I mean,
talking about their people, not just everybody. They're saying more Mexican has deported by Joe Biden and Obama than any other president, and they're saying Joe is the racist one, not Donald Trump. And so they were putting that in their newspaper. And also they got in the newspaper, the Mexican people are angry at the Democrats because they have organized all the caravans and they have destroyed their cities. And you know, they have brought so much misery in their city. And right now on their side of the border, there's 15,000 Haitians waiting to come in. And about 30,000 Cubans, too, that they were waiting to come in, too, that they were deported by Obama. He arranged something with Castro before he left. So he deported about 30,000 Cubans. Yeah, so it's crazy. And you know, all the little babies being thrown over the wall, especially the 4 and 5 year old and the tiny little baby. And nobody was saying anything to Biden about it. No complaint, no nothing. CNN was never talking about it at all. So, you know, these people are so fake. They're so criminal. And now the Latino people see it. And then also in Guatemala, you know, they have big banners saying, Kamala, stop funding the criminals. And the reason I say that, I take on that banners, because what they're saying on that sign is Kamala stopped funding the criminal, meaning her and Obama, I was going to say Obama, which Obama is running the show, actually, Biden, because they know that the money they're about to give to Guatemala, it's going to go to the pockets of the leaders, and the poor people know that it will never get to them, you know, never. It's never going to happen. So that's why they have banners, Kamala, stop funding the criminals. Kamala, we don't want your money. So they don't want the money to be given to the criminal leaders in that country. And that's what they have those banners on. And it was in the newspaper on the 14th, actually, talking about it.
You know, it's really interesting that, you know, the American liberal press especially, but, you know, most Americans look at everything in terms of everybody wants to be here. Everything we do is good, you know, and it just doesn't work that way, that people are, you know, Guatemalans are proud to be Guatemalans and Hondurans are proud to be Hondurans and Costa Ricans are proud to be Costa Ricans and Mexicans are proud to be Mexicans. And they all have individual history, individual culture, individual, you know, national stuff that they have. And the arrogance of the left, especially, to think that, well, we're just, you know, we're going to make you better. We're going to make you more like us and you'll be happy. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
You know, they got a completely different view because they don't. And I've talked about this with Claire and with Jonathan and with Peter and all the folks that and you and everybody on the show, is that the fundamental problem with our government officials, as well as with a lot of Americans, but it doesn't have the same effect with individuals. But people in this country refuse to see other people in other countries as they see themselves. Americans look at everybody else as future Americans. And you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's an arrogance. And so when they bring, you know, when we go to Afghanistan and say, well, we're going to make this, you know, like, you know, Detroit. Well, actually, probably is. You know, or we're going to make this like, you know, Michigan. We're going to take Afghanistan and make it a, you know, a Western Democrat, you know, welfare state. And they'll be happy. No, they won't. You know, and to try and treat these other countries like, well, we'll just give money. And that'll take care of the problem because everybody wants money. And once you have money, everything is solved. And, of course, that's not true either. You know, and so this arrogance and ignorance at the same time, this arrogant, ignorant combination is what causes all the problems. So Harris gets down there and she thinks, I'm wonderful. Oh, yeah. I'm American. I'm rich. I'm free. You know, everybody will love me and I'll give away money and the people will love me more. And it's simply, you know, arrogance and stupidity. It's a bad combination.
Yep. She didn't expect all those banners and all the people screaming at her, go back. And Trump won. Everybody was screaming at her.
See, that was the funniest one of all.
But you know, Greg, a lot of people that come to America like a family, if you come a little older, you're not going to change. You bring in all your stuff. Like people, when they come from the Middle East, they want to bring Sharia law. They want to bring all their crap here.
Well, not everybody.
Young girl. Well, I'm just saying, older people, not all of them, but many people. Like
Jackie?
I came when I was 13.
Right.
I grew up with an American family, so my way is American.
Yeah.
And I have changed because I see some of my sisters, they still are living like if they're back in Nicaragua. And I'm like, why in the heck did you come here? You're supposed to better yourself, change your lifestyle. But they bring it here. Yeah, so.
Well, there's a difference between bringing it here. Let me just jump in here for a second real quick. There's a difference, you know, like in the Bay Area in San Francisco, we have a pretty large Persian community. And obviously from Iran. But the Iranians who want to, you know, bring Sharia law here, you know, who live, you know, who do the mosque thing and their goal is to destroy America is one group. But the Persians, you know, Persians who consider themselves Persians who came from Iran, same country, who consider themselves independent, a lot of them are Christian. A lot of them are Muslim too, but it's not the religion that matters so much as what you do with it. It's what you do with your life. Do you assimilate to being a Persian American, or are you basically, you know, an Iranian who's here to destroy the country? So there's two ways that people come to this country. They assimilate and they bring their culture with them, which is fine. You know, I don't care. That's a great thing. As long as you're American first. All right. And then Persian second, or in my case, Canadian second, you know, or Australian second, or whatever it is. I mean, obviously, I had the profound influences on my life from Canada and Australia because I came here as a teenager, too, pretty much the same time you did. It's kind of funny. We could have passed each other by and not even known it. Wow. Anyway, but the point being that it's okay to bring your culture with you so long as you become and adopt an American, you know, primary focus and primary point of view and primary orientation. But I think it's the immigrants like you and me that look around and we can see how Americans had this arrogance and stupidity of thinking, A, everybody wants to be American, B, everybody wants to come here, and C, if it works here, it's going to work everywhere else in the world. And none of those things are true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you see when these immigrants come to the United States,
right.
What they do is form many duplicates of where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the 80,000 Bosnians that immigrated to St. Louis, South Central, I think now is a mini Bosnia. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You have a mini Italian town in St. Louis. So that's what they do. But, you know, the most important thing that we need to be looking at is what are these people going to do as far as a profession and employment? Because the way it stands now with artificial intelligence, and we can see it happening all the time, artificial intelligence is going to remove about 40-50% of the present jobs that we have. A middle-aged person coming to America today is not going to be able to learn the skills that's needed in order to strive in their profession. I mean, it just ain't going to happen. It doesn't happen with Americans. So what's going to happen then, Greg?
I don't know. I wouldn't admit them to the country in the first place. You know, the only reason for somebody to immigrate here is if they're going to add something to the country. So in other words, they come trained, they've done the work, you know, back home to bring something to the table. that they offer, you know, immigration. See, people forget, and I've said this before on the show too, and I remember reading it from the Center for Immigration Studies, and I'm pretty sure where I got this from. Immigration is not for immigrants. We don't bring immigrants in this country to help immigrants. We bring immigrants in this country to help Americans. In other words,
exactly.
You know, they come here to make the country better. You know, when my family tried the first time to get here, they were declined. Okay? Because my father didn't have a profession that at the time that was needed. So he had to do something else, and he did. He wasn't very good at it, but that wasn't the point. Anyway, but we got here. We got here because he was an entrepreneur. He tried to create a new business. Didn't work, but that's okay. He tried. All right? So that's, you know, entrepreneurs have a better chance of coming in here because they're going to create jobs, right? If you come here with the idea of you know, going on welfare, that's what the illegal alien population is all about, because they certainly wouldn't be admitted under any decent immigration policy. If you applied to the American consulate in Ecuador and said, yeah, I want to go to the United States and sign up for welfare, how far do you think you're going to get? Nowhere, you know? But to let these people come in illegally and do it is a crime. What I find so interesting that's not being reported in our press, and this is what Josie was just talking about, is the fact that Mexico, you know, was happier under Trump policies of remain in Mexico, of stay south of the Mexican border, you know, if you're coming in.
Yes.
And these other countries were happier too. They don't want the open borders. They don't want the population drained. They don't want all their workers and their tax base to go to the United States. We don't want them either, because we don't want the welfare cases. We certainly don't want the crime. We don't want the crowds. And where are the environmentalists with all this big carbon footprint these millions of people are bringing in? I mean, where are you guys? That's another story. But the point is, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for the United States.
Yeah.
It's not good for the countries these people are leaving. It's, you know, because they need them. People need their countries need their people to work, to create wealth, you know, to keep the country going. So this idea that these hundreds of thousands or millions of people leaving is somehow a good idea is insane. Which is why I wanted Trump, you know, to come to do this, you know, like an investment thing with Costa Rica, not Costa Rica, El Salvador, you know, partner up with the president of El Salvador. Yeah. And say, hey, dude, go ahead.
And, you know, I just finished watching a video from the president of El Salvador addressing his people saying, oh, we're doing well. Our country is so good. We need all our Salvadorian people here. So he's convincing his people not to leave. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people already are at the border waiting to come in. And people
now we need to make it
so
attractive.
Because now Kamala says, do not come. Do not come. So they're very upset because a lot of these family, they have sold everything they own.
Mm-hmm.
To bring whatever little money to pay, because right now the cartels with the coyotes are charging up to $10,000 per person. Before it was like $2,000 and $3,000.
What is the perception that these illegal aliens think they're going to get by coming to the country? Do they think it's all milk and honey? Do they think that they're going to get a, you know, like the people that when Obama was elected, do they think they're going to get a house and a car and a living wage?
They get free.
What do they think?
Yeah, they get free health care, they get money, they get children's college for free, they get school for kids with lunch free. A lot of them are getting Social Security, and I don't know how, but they do get it because I personally know people they are getting it, okay?
We just sign up for it.
Even though some of your radical calls from before, whatever her name was, that lady, she said, no way, I work for Social Security. I know the people personally. She doesn't know personally illegals like I do. I do personally. And they get it all free.
So what's their perception? I mean, obviously they're coming here as criminals. So their selfishness is already well documented. Is it just, you know, do they care that Americans have to work to pay for their free stuff?
They don't
care.
Does
that even enter their mind?
They don't care.
Okay.
No, they don't care. Right. Just like all the people sitting in their butts right now, collecting all this money. They don't want to work. This roadhouse has 35 people short. Cheddos has 30 people short. All Kentucky Fried Chicken, Popeye's paying $13 for people to come and fried chicken. Nobody wants to work because that's how communism starts. And that's what this government is doing at the moment. They're trying to break the United States, and that's how it starts, by giving free, and then they'll cut them off. And then people are like, oh, my God, where are we going to get this money? And meanwhile, some of the restaurants are shutting down. See, that's the agenda to shut the country. And this is what's going on right now. So many people are like, they don't want to work. They don't want to work, and that's the system. And I wanted to say one more thing on my report.
Oh, sure.
I was reading Spain. It's starting to deport a lot of illegal migrants. They have come to Canary Islands in other areas in Spain. They're starting to deport them back to South Africa and West Africa. And this particular guy, he was from Tambacounda, one of the, tribes. And he went back and he's given a report that he was selling flowers in Spain and making a little money. And that's a lot of money compared to what he was having in Tambacounda. And so he's back. So Spain is sending back a lot of illegal people in their country. And exactly that's what Donald Trump will do. And I know Obama and Joe Biden has deported so many illegals in this country. But I believe, truly believe, that Donald Trump is going to clean house of all these thousands and thousands that Biden is letting them in right now, especially the cartels. We are going to clean house. Guarantee you that. And I can hardly wait.
Well, I wish we could get in touch with the president of El Salvador. I think I mentioned this before. Just for the fun of it, see if you can contact the president.
Fine.
Give it a try. You never know what will happen. You know, and tell them that, you know, I mean, we're not the world's biggest show, but, you know, we do have some insights, and maybe we can talk to some folks and, you know, get the word out. And, you know, because I know some representatives that might be interested in what he's saying. I know people that, you know, we both mm-hmm. know people that know Trump, so we can get the word to him that maybe we can get those two connected. I mean, who knows? Pianki?
Well, it's really serious, the way things are going. You know, it's just like Medicaid expansion. They entice states to get involved with this by saying that we're going to pick up X number of dollars. But the government only does that for a certain amount of time. Then when they pull out, mm-hmm. the state is now faced with a program that everybody has joined on to expecting to get it for free. But when the federal government pulls out, then the state is left with coming up with a solution on how to pay for it. And that normally means that you have to tax the people of the state.
What a surprise. Yeah, it's true. I mean, the whole healthcare thing is an absolute mess. We're going to have to deal with it at some point. I need to shift gears here. I've got a story to tell. Obama's pandemic playbook as Fauci's instructions under Trump. That's the title of the show today. So, Josie, I don't know if you heard the first 10 minutes of the show, but we have a lot to talk about. Pianki, stick around if you can. I got to play something. It's about 4 minutes long. It's another adventure in our founding moments. So I'm going to mute both of you, give mm-hmm. you about 4 minutes to do stuff, and then we're going to come back. And we have a lot to talk about, and I think, Josie especially, this is going to be right up your alley. So I'll be right back in just a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. A meme came to my attention last week that inspired this week's Founding Moments. It has Justice Scalia in the background, and it says, "The Dems are screwed. The state legislatures can decertify their election results. In all cases. The Federalist, number 44, and then it had a court case, Prince v. U.S., 1997. Federalist 44 was written by James Madison and published January 25, 1788. The title is Restrictions on the Authority of the Several States. This paper primarily deals with provisions in the Constitution that states used to do, which have now been delegated to the federal government in the Constitution. Where states got into trouble before the Constitution was the lack of uniformity in coining money, treaties, credit, ex post facto laws, duties, taxes, imports, exports, trade, and anything that was more confusing with many states all doing things differently. It was a mess. What has attracted all the attention to Federalist 44 these days is Section 3, where it says, "The election of the President and Senate will depend, in all cases, on the legislatures of the several states. and the election of the House of Representatives will equally depend on the same authority in the first instance and will probably forever be conducted by the officers and according to the laws of the states. This applies directly today to the 2020 state election audits, particularly in Arizona, and the future audits in Georgia, New Hampshire, the continued one in Michigan, and any of the other states currently visiting the Senate audit in Arizona. What is so interesting is that if the states have authority over elections to federal office, then the states have the ability to both certify elections and also decertify based on evidence of fraud. It's not being used as a phrase yet, but we should classify the state election audits as an ongoing investigation of the 2020 election, given that the occupants of the White House should not have the power to do anything until the ongoing investigation is complete, and any actions taken so far should be neutralized. Should the states determine that the audits reveal election fraud, they can decertify their mistake with Biden electors and replace them with legal and proper Trump electors. The federal government has no part in this, despite Attorney General Merrick Garland's partisan threat to throw lawful election auditors in jail, seize the ballots and voting machines, and pull a Stalinist-like purge of lawful state exercise of authority. We are in unexplored territory here, but if Federalist 44 is any guide, then the states have the complete power and responsibility over election of federal officials, be they president, senator, or representative, however long the ongoing investigations take to reach the true and correct election result. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. That's federalistpapers.org. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. So we're back. Josie's back. Pianki, I think, has left us for a bit, but hopefully he'll join us again soon, because I have what I think is the future bombshell. He'll be back. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad you're here. Josie, did you get a chance to hear the beginning of the show? I just wanted to check, see if you
No, I did not.
All right. So let me get you caught up. Let me get everybody caught up. All right. So the title of the show today, Obama's Pandemic Playbook as Fauci's Instructions Under Trump. Here's what happened. Just in the last 24 hours, some amazing things have been revealed to me. One, I found this website called Just Security. Just Security is put up by the New York University Law School. The New York University Law School is funded by Open Society. Open Society is George Soros' organization. Okay. So what it is, and it's going to be up hopefully on the Action Radio group here pretty soon. I gave it to Gene to post, and I'm going to sort of sharing the burden. People posting on, because I can't post yet. I get 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, I'll be back, and I'll hopefully be a little more careful this time. It's basically the leftist timeline, you know, of the pandemic, you know, or the plandemic, as we like to call it here. So let me see if I can pull it up right here. So this, let me read their about section, because it really is really the first item in the timeline. So about come on, guys, mass hit. Here we go. This is a ton of information. It's big. Big group. Here we go. About us. Just Security. Here we go. This is New York University. Is an online forum for the rigorous analysis of national and international security. Founded in 2013. Wasn't that beginning of Obama's second term? What a surprise. We aim to promote principled and pragmatic solutions to problems confronting decision makers in the United States and abroad. You know, they want to tell them what to do. Our expert authors are individuals with significant government experience, academics, civil society practitioners, individuals directly affected by national security policies, and other leading voices. Okay, here's where it gets interesting. We are grateful for the support from the Open Society Foundations, Global Institute for Advanced Study at New York University, Atlantic Philanthropies, New York University School of Law, and individual donors. It's a bunch of leftists. Okay,
yeah.
Here's what got my interest. All right, so what got my interest was I'm reading this timeline. And I'm thinking, well, this is very interesting, and they have it starts Friday, January 13th, 2017. Well, that's a curious date. Hmm. That's only 2 days after Dr. Fascist announced to the world, I think Colorado University, that Trump was going to face a pandemic during his administration. Remember that?
Yeah.
You were going to say something.
Definitely.
Yeah. What were you going to say? Okay.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so January 11th, and I went over this a little bit earlier. Let me pull up my timeline again. Yeah, I got so much stuff here. It's going to be a crowded screen today. So my timeline, which I've been building forever and ever, January 11th, 9 days before Trump's inauguration, Dr. Fascist announces that Trump will have a major pandemic during his administration. I'll get the exact newspaper, magazine quotes that I have that in there in my timeline. January 13th, this is where it gets more interesting. The joint Obama-Trump transition teams, I didn't even know there was one, the joint Obama-Trump transition team runs an exercise for pandemic preparedness. Okay, think about that. Why? Okay, you know how my brain works, right? And this is something that you work on too with your sources. Why would Obama-Trump transition teams do anything together a week before the inauguration? Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
They had it all planned.
Well, here's what I'm hoping you'll look into is Obama's direct involvement with Dr. Fauci, Dr. Fascist, after Trump took office. Okay, what went on behind the scenes? Did Obama coordinate the lockdowns and the mask mandates through Dr. Fascist behind Trump's back, going directly to the state governors? That's what I'm wondering. Okay, here's the timeline. The outgoing Obama team runs the Trump transition team through a series of pandemic scenarios. Why would the outgoing Obama team run the Trump transition team through a series of pandemic scenarios? The transition documents obtained by Politico, I'm reading directly from the timeline here, show that the purpose of the exercise is to familiarize the incoming team with domestic incident management policy and practices in the face of a major crisis. Why would they do that? All right. Key takeaways from the exercise include a collective understanding of the science and the disease must drive response decisions. There's the science. Okay. What did Fauci say the whole time? We have to follow the science. It's right out of the Obama playbook. What a surprise. Two. Days and even hours. This is right here. I put this on my hard drive.
Yeah.
So unless they come knocking on my door, you know, it's out there. We're going to post this for everybody to read. It's not a secret. Anyway, two, days and even hours are paramount in order to build as much lead time as possible. For what? Three, a coordinated and unified national response and message is necessary. Let me do that again. A coordinated and unified national response, and here we go, and message is necessary. Why would a national message be necessary? I don't know. To make everybody scared to death so they'll take vaccines? How about that?
Yeah.
Hey, let's find out how much Obama's making off vaccines. What do you think? You want to look at, let's see. Is Obama invested in Big Pharma? What do you bet? See, this is where we're ahead of the news. Okay, this is what everybody else is going to talk about in about 6 months, okay? But you're hearing here first. We'd like to be at least 6 months to a year ahead of everybody else, all right? So this is what's going to happen, all right? So we're going to start broadcasting this. I'm going to give this to a few people who I know are also, in the know about this kind of stuff, and we'll see what happens. Okay, so coordinated, unified national response and message is necessary. So you remember the Facebook connection to fascist, right? To Dr. Fascist?
Yeah.
Zuckerberg said, we're going to bring you a message. We're going to coordinate this. So now there's the three of them, okay? So now we've got this incestuous relationship with Obama, Fauci, and Zuckerberg. Oh, this is getting better and better. And George Soros. Yeah, so Soros is funding this.
They're all behind.
Well, China and the WHO. They're all in on this. Basically, this is a worldwide vaccine marketing program, okay? By a bunch of genocidal, sociopathic drug pushers. Make it psychopathic. It sounds better.
I love it.
So that's what they are, all right? So no one else in the world is going to tell you this. We're breaking news here like crazy. This is going to be one of these landmark shows, all right? So a coordinated, unified national response and message is necessary. So Facebook provides the message. Dr. Fascist provides the, quote, science. The coordination comes from the Coronavirus Task Force. Trump is pushed to the side. Remember how he's pushed to the side, literally pushed to the side in these meetings? And he had Dr. Fascist and Dr. Birx with the scarf and all these other people. Scott Atlas. Trump brings in Scott Atlas. He gets pushed to the side. So you've got this cabal of basically Trump liars. You've got these bunch of lying advisors that are running all this kind of stuff behind Trump's back, coordinating the governors. Remember when Dr. Fascist, in one of the coronavirus briefings, he said, I talk to governors all the time. And my question immediately was, why do you talk to governors all the time? Who the hell are you, Dr. Fascist?
Why?
All right. Gets better. Okay. Four, medical countermeasure strategy is key for success. Medical countermeasure. Just, that would be masks, lockdowns, everything else. So the pandemic, you know, scenario, the pandemic playbook literally was the instructions for Fauci in a Trump administration. That's what I'm getting to. This is Obama's way. It wasn't a transition for Trump because he knew Trump was going to throw this out. No, this was Obama's instructions, I believe, to Dr. Fascist for how to run the pandemic that they were planning on during a Trump administration, pushing Trump out of the way. That's what I think is going on.
Yeah.
Think I'm onto something?
They had it all well organized from way back, Greg. All of it.
Yeah. Okay. Listen to number
they
four.
They knew exactly what was coming, and this was the only way to destroy this country and trying to destroy Trump, but they had to destroy the whole world in order to make it look real. And that's very sad. These people are criminals.
No.
Many of these people are going to face prison time, let me tell you.
I hope so.
It's coming. Their turn is coming. Oh, yeah.
See, we know what's going on. We have to show everybody else what's going on. We have to prove to the majority of the population what's going on. So that's our job now. Listen, number four. I didn't read the whole thing. Medical countermeasure strategy is key for success, including social distancing and addressing shortages in ventilators and personal protective equipment. This is before Trump even took office.
Yeah.
This is 3 years before Trump took office. The week before he takes office, the playbook from Obama to the Trump administration, which in reality I believe was to Fauci, says medical countermeasure strategy is key for success, including social distancing and addressing shortages in ventilators and personal protective equipment. What was Trump obsessed with during his whole time? Following fascists, after fascists, social distancing, you know, and ventilators and personal. He got all that equipment. He got all that personal protective equipment from wherever he got it from. He said, I'm going to make sure everybody has a mask.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to make sure everybody has a ventilator. Okay. That was the distraction. So the playbook, let's follow this further. The playbook from Obama is how to distract Trump during the pandemic so they can lock down, mask everybody, destroy the economy. Dr. Fascist and Big Pharma gets to sell vaccines. Obama gets his revenge on Trump. And the message is provided by Zuckerberg.
And they wanted to keep Joe Biden locked up because of the COVID. That was the plan, because since he's so sick, he doesn't have to do rally. He doesn't have to do anything at all.
Yeah.
That was the plan.
So they need an idiot to be their voice, who will say anything he's told to say, and even if you go after him, he doesn't know anything. He's the perfect patsy. So they got their idiot spokesperson. They've got all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Okay, so we know from the emails. Okay, about the connection of Dr. Fascist to Facebook, the Facebook fascist connection.
Uh-huh.
We know that. I've got articles. I went over that earlier this week. What we don't know is this playbook. And I found it in the liberal timeline. They're not hiding this. It's right out there. Anyway, okay. So let me, go ahead.
Yesterday morning, and I kind of like forgot about it, but yesterday morning, American Voice was going to report a big shocking story that 54% of child trafficking, Facebook, it's responsible for it.
Oh, I believe it. They don't care. Yeah, I mean, they'll censor anybody who mentions vaccines, you know, as counter-revolutionary or whatever, but they don't care about child sex trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the point. But here's what's interesting about this timeline is what's missing. This timeline, I could not find a single reference to hydroxychloroquine, not one.
In the
liberal timeline. I couldn't find a reference to the CDC changing the pandemic guidelines. In 2017, in April 21st of 2017. That's not here either. It goes right from March, May, President Trump proposes cutting money for pandemic preparedness. So in other words, they're cutting their budget. Mm-hmm. Remember how Fauci said he needed a budget? He needed money to do stuff?
Yes.
So Congress put back the money that Trump cut from him. So Trump tried, but Trump didn't have any backing. He didn't have the people around him like Peter Navarro and some of the other folks he needed to do this, because they'd all, like Sebastian Gorka and people like that, because they'd been gotten rid of already. He had nothing but he had the whistleblower, Eric Chiaramella. He had other toadies. He had leaks from Schiff, Shifty Schiff. You know, had all those other people going. He didn't have good people around him. He had basically traitors around him who were loyal to Obama. That was the problem, and that still is the problem.
And you know I call it Caramella. Caramella guy, whistleblower, it was all a hoax. That's why they didn't show who it was and all that. It was all made. It was a hoax. The whole thing, like the Russia collusion, was a hoax. All the prostitutes against Trump was a hoax. I mean, you just make a list of all this attacks. This president has really been attacked like no other president ever. But it's all going to be released. It's all going to come out.
I'm waiting.
We got all the evidence of everything.
I know, but it's got to be presented. And well, I'll tell you, I think the Arizona audit should be done in the next week or two, right?
I've been praying on that, actually.
Yeah, so that's going to be – well, here's what I didn't know. I just found this out last night. Christina Bob did a report with one of the Arizona senators. They only have a one-vote majority, 16-14, in the Arizona Senate. So they have 16 Republicans, 14 Democrats. If that election were equal, or if there were one more Democrat, there wouldn't be an audit right now. So we were one vote away from not having an audit. That's how close it was. All right. So let me tell you what else I found. I found this website, KHN, not sure what this is. Evidence shows Obama team left a pandemic game plan for Trump administration. It says when discussing pandemic preparedness and COVID-19, clearly the Obama administration did not leave any kind of game plan for something like this. Well, I don't believe that's Mitch McConnell said that. All right, so that's a bad quote. Senate Leader, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell alleged that the Obama administration did not provide the Trump administration with any information about the threat about a possible pandemic. Then this may be the wrong article. Let's take a look at this real quickly here. Nah, I think I misread this one. It does establish the pandemic playbook, but they're saying that, well, it wasn't enough. Trump didn't follow it. Well, McConnell hates Trump anyway. So that makes sense that he would accuse Trump of not following the game plan. Let me find another one. I got a few sources here I want to play with. Let's get this one. This is one from the American Thinker. Let me throw this into the mix as well, because this is an interesting pot that we're stirring. I'm curious if anybody thinks that we're onto something here with Obama. You know, that Bianca, you want to call back in. Anybody that's curious, 215-383-3832. If you think that maybe there's more to Obama than we've heard about yet. Here's something. This is June 6, 2021. Thomas Lifson, the editor at American Thinker. All right. He says, why was Mark Zuckerberg's even bigger deal offered to Fauci redacted from the Freedom of Information Act emails just released? See, here's what wasn't released. Okay. This is fascinating too. Dr. Dale Brown with an interesting question on Twitter about a curious redaction from the emails of Dr. Fauci that were released last week. On March 15th, 2020, the mega-rich founder of Facebook sent a fawning email and offering to share a few ideas of ways we could help you to get your message out. We just learned about that from the pandemic playbook, right? So this is what has happened. So so Zuckerberg must have been in on the pandemic playbook, you know, because he spent enough time with Obama. He went to dinner there all the time, right? So that probably during those dinners, they cooked up how to coordinate the information, you know, the minister of propaganda, you know, Mark Goebel Zucker, all right? So he worked with the coordinator behind the scenes, you know, Obama, you know, to get the message out and stop anybody from getting a different message out. That's what Event 201 was all about. They talked about how to silence anybody that doesn't say what they want said, okay? So they're in on this World Economic Forum. Well, who's behind that? Isn't Soros behind that too?
Yep.
He is.
He's behind. And Greg, remember Loretta Lynch when she was going to meet Clinton in that room at the airport somewhere? Remember the reporter reported it?
Yep.
That reporter was found dead 2 days
ago. What a surprise. Yeah, we're looking into that too. I haven't had a chance to read the story. Do you know the details? How did he allegedly kill himself?
they're not talking about it. They just say he was found dead in his apartment.
Of course, you always assume a suicide, right? They always assume a suicide when a 45-year-old is found dead.
Oh,
of course. Three shots to the back of the head. Suicide.
So anybody that gets in the way of Obama or Clinton, especially the Clintons, they will die. So this reporter, young, and he said he was being threatened. There's videos of him coming out saying he was being threatened of him and his family. And now
of course.
He's dead.
Yeah, what a surprise. Which means if I get those same threats, if we get too powerful here and we start getting, you know, known the way I think we're going to be known and have the influence we're going to have, you know, I'm going to put the message out regularly. If anything happens to me, it's not a suicide. All right. And one of you is going to have to pick up the baton and run with it. So I've already prepared myself for that eventuality or possibility, not eventuality, that's the wrong word, but possibility that if we get as big as we are and we challenge the power authorities, the deep state, the way we're going to, it's going to be very interesting for me.
You're going to get big once Trump gets closer to return because all these other medias are going to be shut down. Yeah, it's coming.
Well, we're still here. Yeah, I don't know what's coming, but I'm in. I've already pledged my life to this project. So
all the money from Twitter, Facebook, and all that, they need to give it to all the people that have lost their businesses. Especially businesses they've been at 40 years, like a cleaner in New York City, good family, 40 years they have to shut down because now nobody's dry cleaning their clothes because everybody's staying at home. There's no need to dry clean your clothes and press them nice and pretty to go to the office and work, you know?
Well,
so
the office has permanently changed too. So many people are used to working at home now and they like it. So that's fascinating too.
Oh,
the commercial real estate market is yeah. Well, no, I like working at home.
But you know, a lot of business suffer because now the dry cleaners are shutting down, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have barely any business because everybody's at home. I was with AT&T because, you know, AT&T are nothing but a ripoff. AT&T, when they first want to get you, they put somebody who speaks good English here from America. Then when you have problems like I've been having with my internet, they send you to Philippines, Bangladesh, and all those countries. And I was talking to a girl from the Philippines that we finally had to hang up because she barely spoke English and her stupid rooster was singing on and on and on and on. It must have been 4 in the morning or 2 in the morning.
We're getting a little sidetracked.
That rooster couldn't let us conduct business. It was sad. So
we're a little off topic here. I hold the rooster. Let's get to Bianca, and then we'll get back to the. it's okay. No, you get so enthusiastic. It's funny, Bianca. What's your comment? Then I want to get back to what's missing from the Fauci emails.
Well, you know, you were talking about Obama earlier, and I do think that he has something to do with a lot of the things that we're seeing. But then you have to ask yourself, who's behind him? And that's like the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain.
Yep.
Pay no attention to the
man
behind
him, but we have to figure out who it is.
Well, what if it's not one person? What if it's a coalition of people? What if he is in a cabal with, I don't know, Xi Jinping, you know, the head of the WHO, you know, Dr. Fascist, Zuckerberg, Bill Gates? You know, what if this is like the Bohemian Club? What if this is like the leftist Bohemian Club? Remember the Bohemian Club was this organization back in the early 1900s that, you know, ran the world? You know, it was Wilson and various other people, Carnegie Mellon, you know, the big, like the robber barons, and they all, I don't even like that term, but, you know, some of the richest people in the country, you know, thought the elitists, the head of the Federal Reserve, the new reserve, you know, all that kind of stuff. Those are the people that used to meet and talk about how to run the world. Same old problem, control. It's always individuals versus control. All right, so let me get back to this. So I'm going to backtrack just a bit to get you caught up. On March 15, 2020, this is from American Thinker editor Thomas Lipson. Why was Mark Zuckerberg's even bigger deal offered Fauci redacted from the FOIA Freedom of Information emails released? March 15, 2020, Dateline. I'll get my Dateline in a minute. The mega-rich founder of Facebook sent a fun email to Fauci thanking him for his leadership and offering to share a few ideas of ways we could help you get your message out. So here's the email. It says, Tony, from Mark Zuckerberg. He calls him Tony, right? I wanted to send a note of thanks for your leadership and everything you're doing to make our country's response to this outbreak as effective as possible. Okay. Skip down. As a central part of this hub, I think it will be useful to include a video from you because people trust you and want to hear from you. Okay, we talked about that too. I'm also doing a series of live stream Q&As with health experts to try and use my large following on the platform, 100 million followers, to get authoritative information as well. There's the science, all right? Finally, and it's all redacted. There's nothing there. There's four lines starting off with, finally, nothing. What was said in the last four lines of that email? This is the key email. This is when we talked about, you know, getting the message out, coordinating the coronavirus information. You know, he's going to be out in 48 hours. He's going to do Q&A. He's going to do videos. He's got all these followers. And then he says, finally, and nothing's there. And then he says, again, I know you're incredibly busy, so don't feel the need to respond if this doesn't seem helpful. What did he say in those four lines? We don't know. It's redacted. Back to the article. The following day, March 16th, Fauci's Director of Communications and Government Relations, Courtney Blay, sent an email to Fauci mentioning the video offer, but then referring to, quote, an even bigger deal that is redacted. That's the part that's missing. Something she thinks needs to go up the food chain to the White House. Oh, boy. All right. And that doesn't mean necessarily Trump. He says, per the email below, Mark Zuckerberg has extended a few offers to do videos with you that we would be happy to see clearance on for you to do. Who's this to? From Courtney Belay to Dr. Anthony Fascist. All right. Videos to do if you're amenable. These would have the weight and impact of television, really more so. Please advise if you want to do, and we will seek clearance with VP office and work with Patty to sort out the logistics. So this was March 16th, 2020. So this would have been, this is still Trump's administration. So why are they going to the vice president's office? Oops. Uh-oh. Mike Pence, were you coordinating with Facebook, with Zuckerberg? Because were you responsible for putting Biden in office, as we know? Because he didn't do what he was supposed to do December 23rd. Because he didn't keep the election challenge going on January 6th. Why would they go to the vice president's office and work with Patty to sort out the logistics? Guess who we need to look into? My aunts. Comments? Fellow conspirators?
To me, I think Mike Pence is dirty. So they blackmail him, and they got some dirt on Mike Pence. Yes.
Well, was he blackmailed or was he in on it?
He was
Mike
in on it.
Pence. Bianchi?
Yes.
What do you think?
Hard to tell, Greg. It's just so many angles. It's probably why come it's best that Trump did not get back into the White House, because he would still have. But you still will be surrounded by the same mess. And that's exactly what it is.
Somebody's surrounded by the same liars. Yeah. Well, and I asked a question to Bill Fecky the other day, even if he, you know, we have to get the office back for him because that's the right thing to do because he won the election. But I still question whether he wants the job. And that's something we need to talk about too. Let me finish up this email here. It says, but an even bigger deal is his offer. Redacted. The sooner we get that up the food chain, the better. I gave Bill Hall a heads up of this opportunity, and he is standing by to discuss this with HHS and White House comms. Okay, so there's a secret government in the White House working directly with Facebook, you know, the message out. I believe it's Dr. Fascist. So Dr. Fascist is basically running a government within the government, coordinating with Obama, with Facebook, to get their message out, pushing Trump to the side, pushing him into things like ventilators, and you know, they put their message out there, you know, hydroxychloroquine bad, you know, masks are good, all which we know is the reverse, you know, hydroxychloroquine is good, masks are bad, you know, and so all this stuff, and it's all about, well, like I say, Fauci sells vaccines, so he makes his folks rich at Big Pharma, plus himself, and Obama, I think, is in this to get Trump. Because he hates that Trump won and defeated Hillary. And I think there's the two of these things, and they coordinated the pandemic to hit it during an election year, so they both got what they wanted, to sell vaccines, and Obama got to stick it to Trump. That's what I think is going on here. Ooh. Any ideas?
It's funny as they say, ooh. But Greg,
since we see nothing further in that time. You're good.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The other thing that I was thinking is when President Trump returns, I wonder if he's still going to keep his vice president. He's going to get rid of him.
Oh, no, he's already gone.
What you're
talking
about.
He's already gone. No, no. In fact, they're already talking about, you know, DeSantis as vice presidential pick. Oh, no. Pence hasn't got a prayer going anywhere. He's a traitor. He sucked up to, it looks like here, if this is true, sucked up to Facebook and Fauci. No. We need to investigate Mike Pence. He's probably the deep state. He's like Paul Ryan was to the House of Representatives, who made sure that nothing Republican got out of the House during the time that the Republicans controlled the House. That was his job. So there's always a deep state operative. Yep. You look anywhere in the, you know, there's always one person, you know, managing to make sure that nothing happens. Fauci made sure that a cure never came out for, go ahead.
But legally, when Donald Trump won the election in 2020, his vice president was Mike Pence. So legally, it's his vice president. So
yeah, but vice presidents aren't elected. Mike Pence wasn't on the ballot independently. Trump can dump him if he wants. He can ask him to resign. Spiro Agnew resigned. Oh. You know, when Nixon was, you know, I mean, Trump, you know, Mike Pence is not vice president now, you know. So when Trump gets back in, he can pick anybody he wants as vice president.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, that's what Gerald Ford did when Gerald Ford. He picked Nelson Rockefeller, deep state operative.
Yes.
Okay. So vice presidents are not duly elected. They used to be. They used to be the runner up. In that case, we'd have Trump as president, Hillary as vice president. Oh, wouldn't that have been fun? Jackie, go ahead. I got to finish this article. We got 19 minutes left. I got to make sure I get through
this. Mike Pence is not a rebel rouser.
Well, I don't even think he's an honest man.
He's very self.
Yeah. Let's go through the article. So Thomas Lipson, you know, head of American Thinkers, says, since we've nothing further in that time from the Freedom of Information Act, we can assume that the two men spoke privately. All of these redactions are done under code B6, which, according to the Department of Justice, as I like to say, are allowed to prevent, quote, unwarranted invasions of personal privacy. Given the fact that the offer was shared with multiple federal bureaucrats, up to and including those in the White House, how personal and private could the even bigger deal, quote, 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 offer be? Given Facebook's scurrilous blocking of factual information about the lab leak theory, doesn't the public deserve a completely unredacted version of these emails? And it says, and then you can, you got other stuff there. But that's the question. You know, why don't we get the unredacted version? What's the bigger deal? What was really being offered? I don't know. I'm just speculating here. I just find it curious that all these folks are connected so incestuously. And here's the problem. I got another article here from LifeSite. All right. What Fauci's emails tell us about his deadly incompetence and mishandling of COVID. They're completely wrong. He's not incompetent. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's not mishandling COVID.
Yeah.
He's handling it perfectly for Big Pharma. You know, he's either masters or servants. I'm not sure which. But he's doing exactly what he would do if he were a psychopathic, genocidal vaccine drug pusher. Jesse loves it when I say that. Jesse, why don't you say it once? Just kind of practice it. It really feels good. Dr. Fascist is a genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. Go ahead, give it a try. It really sounds, it makes you feel good. Go for it. Fit in Spanish.
That is too funny. Psychopathic drug pusher.
I'll try one more time. Psychopathic vaccine drug pusher.
Well,
get the podcast. Practice it. Tell me in Spanish.
What was the first part?
Genocidal. All right, now I know I say this comically, but it's not. Let's go over it because it actually makes a lot of sense. I say genocidal because he withheld life-saving information from 500,000 Americans. I think he caused their death.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the media caused their death. I think the health bureaucrats who knew this caused their death. I think the representatives in Congress who knew the truth caused their death. I think that Trump, through his incompetence and negligence, also helped cause their death because he knew hydroxychloroquine works, and he didn't stand by it. He didn't fire the people he should have fired. He didn't bring in the people he should have brought in. So he's He's guilty by negligence, but Dr. Fascist is guilty by premeditated murder because he didn't care how many people he killed as long as he could sell vaccines.
No.
That's what makes him genocidal.
They don't care. My mom's cousin, her daughter just had brain surgery, and she had a lot of blood clots in her head. And they say, it's cancer, but she was, from the vaccine. And my husband's friend had open heart surgery full of blood clots too. So
that's what it does. The protein
and I had
spikes.
I had a 23-year-old girl last week, and I'm in touch with her. She says, since I got the vaccine, I have so much chest pain. It's kind of weird. She was complaining to me about it.
Check it for blood clots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's got to check it out. You know. So let me put this all together so people will have a record of what we're talking about. All right. So genocidal, psychopathic, vaccine drug pusher. Genocidal, we just went over. He's responsible for the deaths of everybody that he withheld information from. Okay. Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, the different treatments, the steroids, the various things that doctors are using to cure COVID. It makes him genocidal because of all the people he's killed. All right. What makes him a psychopath is that he has a complete reckless disregard for humanity. He doesn't care. He has no conscience.
No.
He has no feeling. He can watch. He can look at a TV screen and lie through his teeth, and it doesn't bother him one bit. He can sleep at night. He has no conscience. He has no compunction about lying. There's nothing holding him back from lying completely. He doesn't have feelings. He basically wants the money. That's his obsession. Or he wants the control, or both. Either way, he's a psychopath. He's a total psychopath because he has no humanity. He has no conscience. He has no control on his behavior. He can do whatever he wants without any remorse or guilt or conscience. That's what makes him a psychopath. So genocidal, psychopathic, vaccine drug pusher. He's a drug pusher. You look at everything he's done, it's been to push vaccines, from the changing of the CDC guidelines so they could lock down, to talking about masks and all the mask mandates to make people afraid, to demonizing hydroxychloroquine or anything else that was a cure, saying there were no cures. They didn't even look into cures. This is the first disease in history that nobody's looked into a cure. Nobody, except us and a few other folks. But, I mean, there's no major source looking into cures. They're not even asking about it, okay? So let me finish this just to make sure everybody gets this in one place, all right?
Okay.
Then I want to get back to you, all right? But the thing is drug pushing. You know, big pharma pushes drugs. They push new drugs. They push patentable drugs. They push drugs that they've created, you know, in response to to viruses that they've created. Okay. So they're creating. So the vaccine came first. The messenger RNA technology came first. Well, they had to create a market for it. So how did they create the market?
Yeah.
They created the pandemic with this coronavirus. All right. So they scare the hell out of people. They deny any cure, and they say the only way out of this is with vaccines. If you want your life back, you have to buy your life back, your constitutional rights back, with this vaccine. That's criminal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a drug pusher would do. So drug pushers have no regard for human life. They push drugs so they can make money. Big pharma, Dr. Fascists are no better than drug pushers. So you combine all those together, and you get what he is, a genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. Now does it all make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They're like the cartels.
That's interesting.
With all their drugs. They're worse than the cartel people.
So expand on that for a bit.
So I learned how to tell you.
Okay, go ahead.
Hold on a second. Gosh, what was the first word?
Genocidal.
What was the first word? Oh, genocide. Okay. Genocidal, psychopath, vaccine, drug pusher. That's Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, George Soros, Obama, China, and all the countries involved. And they all should pay for all the death of all these innocent people dying. And have you heard anything else from New York about that criminal, the murder over 16,000 grandparents? No. It's under the rug. Nobody's talking about it.
Yeah. And I got the playbook right here, too. I got a copy of it on my computer. I'm going to post that to the Action Radio group as well. The purpose of the playbook, the goal of the playbook for high-consequence emerging infectious disease threats and biological incidents is to assist U.S. government experts and leaders in coordinating a complex U.S. government response to a high-consequence emerging disease threat anywhere in the world with the potential to cause an epidemic, pandemic, or other significant public health event. That's what this is all about. I've got it right here. I got the play. I mean, I literally have the playbook. Okay. Sure. Bianchi, what do you think? Nope.
Well, he's working on it. Hey, I sent you an article about a North Korean student that went to Columbia University. She defected, and she's saying Americans are crazy. What they're doing is going to lead them into just as the people in North Korea are. It's very interesting.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
How's that going to work? I'm not quite sure what you're talking
about. They're doing it to themselves.
Oh, okay. Huh. Let me do something else here I want to do. There's an article I started, I think, yesterday, in American Greatness. Peter Navarro, St. Fauci is what he calls him. You know, a lot of people are calling him Dr. Fallacy. I still like mine, Dr. Fash, but it seems appropriate. Peter Navarro says St. Fauci and others have blood on their hands after blocking Trump administration from distributing 60 million hydroxychloroquine tablets. Now, I started this article yesterday, so I'm going to get to the part which actually is only about 10 minutes left here. I'll make sure we get these in. Here we go. I'm going to start from the beginning. This won't take long. Scientists found that when ventilated patients with a severe version of COVID were given high doses of hydroxychloroquine with zinc, their survival rates could increase dramatically. And that's from the Daily Mail, which is in England, by the way, not the American suck up to, you know, big pharma press. The authors of the new report say, we found that when the cumulative doses of two drugs, hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, were above a certain level, patients had a survival rate 2.9 times higher, 2.99 times the other patients. The study was conducted by the St. Barnabas Medical Center in New Jersey on 255 patients and published on May 31st on the medical site MedRxiv. Contra Trump's repeated endorsements of hydroxychloroquine, I'm not sure what that word contra is all about, but this is what the article says, so we'll figure it out later. Contra Trump's repeated endorsements of hydroxychloroquine, Dr. Anthony Fauci, a member of the president's coronavirus task force at the time, downplayed the drug's potential, maintaining that more data was needed to prove its efficacy. Healthcare providers were given a green light to hydroxychloroquine in March of 2020 through an emergency use authorization. But tens of millions of doses, here's where it gets interesting, tens of millions of doses of the drug were put in limbo last June after the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, revoked the emergency use authorization. Even though the drug had been safely used for decades, FDA bureaucrats deemed the drug, quote, too risky to COVID-19 and likely ineffective to boot. After Fauci said hydroxychloroquine needed further study, Trump was roundly condemned in the media for hailing an unproven drug. Okay, then we got the study of the guy in the fish tank. I'm going to skip that. That's just stupid. Throughout the rest of 2020, social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter censored users who promoted the drug and effective treatment against COVID. That includes us, by the way. Okay. That includes Dr. Zelenko. That includes our Action Radio Zelenko Clearinghouse on COVID that was disabled by Facebook. Okay, here we are getting good information out. So I know firsthand. You know, I've already written the Attorney General of Florida waiting for them to get back to me on suing Facebook over things like that. Okay. Anyway, so they censored. So not only did they put propaganda out, they censored anybody who was telling the truth. Okay. Article says an intense anti-hydroxychloroquine narrative pushed by the media resulted in the drug becoming an unpopular choice for American doctors. Regardless, many doctors went on record to describe the success they were having treating COVID patients with hydroxychloroquine. My friend, Dr. Zelenko. Right? That's not in the article. Investigative reporter Cheryl Atkinson, this is in the article, posited in a May 2020 episode of Full Measure that money and politics were behind the intense anti-hydroxychloroquine bias. Atkinson spoke with cardiologist Dr. William O'Neill, a medical director at the Henry Ford Health System in Detroit, Michigan, where both remdesivir and hydroxychloroquine were being studied. O'Neill told Atkinson that the media's attempts to, quote, disprove and discredit hydroxychloroquine had been very harmful. He said, I think those of us that are actually involved in the scientific endeavor feel that there is some value to it and it has to be tested. Like many other doctors, you know, who'd used it, O'Neill said that he'd seen improvement in every coronavirus patient to whom he had prescribed the drug. The newer drug, remdesivir, on the other hand, left him cold. Okay, why? Remember remdesivir? Remember this? But she was pushing remdesivir with $3,200, you know, a pop plus a hospital stay, as opposed to hydroxychloroquine, which is $20 for a week.
Oh, yeah.
Remdesivir? All right. So that was the approved drug at the time. All right. So let me, I want to get to the point where, let me let's see, we got 6 minutes left. I'm going to get to the key part here. Despite the obvious anti-hydroxychloroquine bias of the medical establishment in the United States, an international poll in April of 2020 found that doctors around the world preferred using the drug to treat patients with coronavirus. Okay, so worldwide, great. Here, no. Why? Because they wanted to sell vaccines. During the March 19th, this is back to the article, during the March 19th news briefing at the White House, in which Trump at first endorsed hydroxychloroquine, he had stressed that the drug had been around for a while, therefore its safety had already been tested. Okay, So here's the part. Here's the key part. All right, which this is Peter Navarro. This is why I really want to get him on the show. All right, so he said, and recently he said this. I had 60 million. Tablets of hydroxychloroquine that Tony Fauci and I guess some other folks wouldn't allow the American public to use because of their hydroxy hysteria. That's a quote from Peter Navarro. I had 60 million tablets. Okay. That would have saved a whole lot of people. All right. Probably would have saved everybody. The 500,000 that eventually died with this or from it. We'll talk about that later too. He had 60 million tablets. You know, you figure a week's dose, 60 million divided by 5, 6 times 30. So that's about at least 3 million people could be saved. Well, we didn't even lost that many. We lost 500,000, 600,000. So everyone could have been saved. You know, he had enough tablets on hand a year ago, back in March, to save, all of Americans. In other words, the 15 days to slow the spread had been 50 days of hydroxychloroquine, because Peter Navarro has 60 million tablets of it, there would have been no pandemic. That's why they had to stop him, because it was all about selling vaccines. See how it all fits?
And Greg, yes. And can I say, we had all the medication on hand, so by the time we felt like we were sick, we started taking it right away, because if you went to get the COVID test and wait for 5 days later for them to give you the result, it was too late. It was too late.
Yeah. No,
so
you got to take it right away. And here's the thing.
If
you take hydroxychloroquine and there's nothing wrong with you, do you know what happens to you?
Nothing.
Nothing. Because it's a safe drug. It's a malaria preventive. People are taking it around the world all the time. All right. So let me get the rest of the tweet from Peter Navarro. He says, blood on John Berman at CNN and St. Fauci's hands. More than 50,000 Americans would be alive today. I think it's a lot higher than that. But that's what he said. Navarro, is back to the article, who has been tasked with helping to distribute the pills, also blasted the FDA's decision in June of 2020. Quote, this is a deep state blindside by bureaucrats who hate the administration they work for more than they're concerned about saving American lives. Think about that. This is an interview with the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Some medical experts have estimated that as many as 100,000 lives could potentially have been saved if hydroxychloroquine had been widely used in 2020. Here's another quote. In a recent working paper analyzing the determinants of COVID-19 fatalities, the authors, Michigan State University economics professor Mark Skidmore and co-author Hideki Toya, estimated that, quote, if the U.S. had made hydroxychloroquine widely available early on, 80,000 to 100,000 lives could have been saved. So they're confirming the same thing. During the height of the anti-hydroxychloroquine hysteria, an Ohio state lawmaker said that she wanted to see President Trump prosecuted in the international court for crimes against humanity because of his continuous promotion of the drug. So this is what's going on. This is how bad it got. He says, anyway, the last line here, depriving a country of the use of an effective treatment against a deadly disease for political purposes would seem to fit that bill. That's what's going on. This is why this needs to go to trial. And this is the author of this. It's an American Greatness, and I posted on the Action Radio group. Okay, it's Deborah Heine, or H-E-I-N-E, Deborah Heine, June 10th of this year. Okay, American Greatness is the website. That I'm glad I got that finished. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. So those that know, Peter Navarro and the people that he knows, that probably told President Trump to ride this thing out initially. Remember when Trump said that? He said, I've been advised to just ride this out. They were right. We were right. There was no need for this pandemic. And now we know that Peter Navarro had 60 million hydroxychloroquine tablets ready to distribute to Americans. There was never a need for Warp Speed. There was never a need to develop the vaccine. We had a proven cure. Dr. Raoult in Marseille had released it. Dr. Zelenko had released it here. Doctors around the world were using it. They approved of the treatment. There was never a need for any of this. And somebody has to stand trial. And I would start with Dr. Yeah. Fascist.
And
then
somebody
Zuckerberg.
Needs to be arrested over all these deaths.
Uh-huh. And then the health bureaucrats. All right. Then Mike Pence, we got to look into him. And Obama. Maybe Hillary, too. I mean, she gave away her uranium.
Oh,
what,
yeah.
does, what does she care? You know, she gave uranium to people who can put it on missiles and aim them at us. She has no conscience. They all,
she
to me,
care.
Are genocidal, psychopathic drug pushers or power
vaccine
pushers, either power or money. And they're using drugs mm-hmm. and the pandemic as their means to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Hello show today, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we covered some interesting ground. Okay. So now you know.
You
now
did.
You know the pieces. Now we just have to look into Obama. We get the connections with Zuckerberg and Fauci and find out how they're all related and how they schemed to completely destroy the Trump administration, you know, keep him distracted with ventilators, keep him distracted with everything, lie to him about how many people would die, and basically take him out of the equation so that the coronavirus task force, which is probably run by Obama behind the scenes, could run the country
mm-hmm.
and screw the country for the election and then screw it up after the election and get where we are now. And we even talked about election fraud. We'll do that tomorrow. Thanks,
right.
Josie. Appreciate your help. We got to go. We're done. Yeah. God bless you. Greg Penglis for Action Radio after a very intense show on blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 in the morning Central. If you want to support us, and we could use it, patreon.com/actionradio. And if you want to listen to us during your drive time, then put Action Radio in your cell phone browser, connect it to your vehicle audio, and there we are. Back tomorrow at 7 in the morning Central with another exciting disclosure 6 months to a year ahead of everybody else.